Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What are the cultural consequences of computers? Dakota State University continues the quest to explore that topic with an upcoming lecture with Heather Wilson, Secretary of the U.S. Air Force. That's happening on Monday, June 25th. She'll focus on the topic of computers and war. Joseph Bottom leads the Classic Institute at Dakota State University, which is dedicated to exploring the good and the ill of our digitized world. And he joins us now on the phone with a preview. Dr. Bottom, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Lori.
For most people already know that Heather Wilson was with South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, and then the Trump administration tapped her to be the to lead the U.S. Air Force. That's a big deal that she's coming back to give this lecture. It's in Rapid City, correct?
It is. I'd gotten to know her a little bit when she was at the School of Mines as the president there. And, you know, I have this lecture series that I've been putting together on computers and their consequences. And so I dropped her a note and I said, you know, the capstone of this entire lecture series where we consider how computers have changed various professions and various pursuits might be yours if you came and talked about war and how the very practice of war has been influenced by the digitizing of everything. And she replied that she had actually had this in mind and been thinking about this and worrying about, you know, the consequences of things like arming artificial intelligence with lethal weapons.
Right.
And as a consequence, she seized the opportunity and said next time she was in South Dakota, she'd do it. And she has a trip to Ellsworth at the end of June. So she's going to be speaking at the Journey Museum in Rapid City at 7 o'clock on Monday night, June 25th.
It seems to me, and she very well may be joining us on this program as well to sort of preview that lecture. It seems to me when I think about this topic as a whole, you could go everywhere to one end with artificial intelligence and drone usage, but you could also go down to the very simple basics of Twitter. And how comments by leaders, you know, using Twitter to communicate can also change the nature of diplomacy and therefore change the nature of war.
Right. I mean, Clausewitz's famous line was that war is diplomacy carried on by other means. And, you know, these are, you're absolutely right, Lori, these are deeply related topics. And the social media is a kind of fascinating thing. The Obama administration or the Obama campaign was really the first to use social media. And then Trump proved himself deeply involved in it. And it's kind of fascinating to watch. But it is going to change the equations. In just war theory, we distinguish jus ad bellum from jus in bello, which is to say justice in the just reasons for going to war and then just behavior during war. And we distinguish the rules and the thoughts about morality in war in these two different ways. At the very beginning, social media changes the reasons for going to war and the methods of going to war. What is an insult to a country? What is a casus belli? What's a cause of war? And this all becomes muddled in ways that people 40 years ago would not have understood.
Right. Clearly, an insult is what maybe in the past was, an insult had greater consequences than it does today. Could you argue that in a sense where things have been said, you know, via social media that then are virtually ignored?
Yeah, and yet, you know, also
and yet, right?
millions of more people.
Right.
It's very odd. You know?
Yeah.
If John Adams wanted to insult somebody, he had to write a letter and then it had to get on a boat and it had to go across to Europe. And, you know, now, and the only people who saw it were professionals.
Right.
Now, you know, millions upon millions of people see President Trump calling the president of North Korea, Rocket Boy.
Right.
And the president of North Korea, you know, announcing that, what did he call Pence, Vice President Pence? Something outrageous in old diplomatic terms.
Right, right.
You know, and now it's just like, oh, well, that's just Twitter.
When you talk about just behavior during a war, do we have the philosophical and ethical foundation on which we stand, does it apply to the current age? And for example, the use of computers, and it's just a matter of sort of, you know, thinking what those foundational truths are and then applying them? Or are we looking at having to really come up with, when we talk about drones, when we talk about, you know, any kind of, you know, smart weapon technology, where we really have to rewrite the rules?
Well, there's, as in so much of the computer revolution, there's good and there's ill here, Lori. Mm. And here's an example of the good. You know, there are no perfect weapons that kill only the target and no others. Nonetheless, computerized targeting with drones and other weapons, artillery, laser-guided artillery, all of this has reduced the side splatter, the inadvertent kills that have always been recognized as an unfortunate and evil but necessary consequence of war. Mm. You don't kill just the people you want to kill in war, and that's one of the reasons war is so terrible. Precision weaponry, as advanced by the computerized age, has much reduced, not eliminated, but much reduced incidental killing, incidental damage. And that's a good. An example of, and of course, let me finish that thought. Just war theory demands that you kill and injure as few non-combatants as you possibly can.
Right.
And so that's all to the good. But here's a confusion. Suppose that an artificial intelligence, a neural network-guided bomb hits the wrong target.
Right.
Who do you blame? Who do you court-martial? Who do you bring up on charges for war crimes? The programmers? Things become very muddled and very confused as a result of these changes that have arrived already and the even bigger changes that are impending.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Joseph Bottom from Dakota State University. He runs the Classics Institute, and we're sort of previewing an upcoming lecture with Heather Wilson, who leads the U.S. Air Force. And Dr. Bottom, we need to take a quick break and come back for more of this conversation, if you'll stay on the line for us. For
Absolutely.
Listeners, you're Within the Moment on SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking with Joseph Bottom. He leads the Classics Institute at Dakota State University. And we're previewing the upcoming lecture by Heather Wilson. She's Secretary of the United States Air Force, and she's returning to Rapid City Monday, June 25th at 7 p.m. For a lecture at the Journey Museum. The topic is computers and war. And one of the reasons we're talking about this now is because the event is free and it's open to the public, but the seating is limited. So you'll want to head over to the Journey Museum website to try to get your tickets to that early. And Joseph Bottom, we're talking a little bit about just some, you know, previewing some of those big, you know, big umbrella issues. And you were talking before the break about accountability and when mistakes or errors are made, you know, who is to blame? Is it the programmer? Is it the, you know, the drone operator? How do we make some of those decisions? And I'm thinking back to an Independent Lens, you know, film that I watched and interviewed the director of, that talked about PTSD among soldiers and airmen who were drone operators. And were distant from, you know, the activities of killing. They didn't get their hands dirty in one sense of the word, but still were suffering from the trauma of some of the decisions that they made. And that might be another interesting area to sort of explore. How are humans interacting with the computers, and what does that new way of interacting do to us?
Yeah, this then enters, I mean, that's a profound observation, Lori, because this enters, you know, one of the fields that I'm fascinated by and beginning to explore, which is this, the human-computer intersection.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I have this lecture series going is my own sense that over the 40 years of the computer revolution, we've forgotten a lot about the way people used to interact with technology and with the world, and our kind of, you know, this experience of computers is in one sense virtual. The drone operators are seeing, you know, a video image in essence, and you certainly see worse at a movie than is visible through, you know, the screen that they're looking at with the camera in the nose of the drone. But somehow, you know, they're both detached and present at the moment of death in which the bomb explodes. And that's psychologically peculiar. It's, you know, enters into the question of how virtual reality works and what our reaction to, you know, video is when we know it's real and when we know it isn't real, which ultimately then impinges on the idea of what the real is and how virtual reality and the potential for total immersion, which we're aiming toward now in, you know, in the progression of the computer revolution, what that's going to do to us psychologically and socially as well.
There's so much that we don't know. Is our learning and our thinking about that aspect of computers in today's culture moving forward as quickly as the computer knowledge and the technology itself is moving forward?
Not even close.
Not even close.
the technology is changing so rapidly that we're both forgetting the past and yet not, you know, having a clear understanding of where we're going. The technology is far out ahead of any ethical considerations of its use. And, you know, the clearest example, it seems to me, is artificial intelligence. The ways in which neural networking or neural networks have simply jumped over all the old distinctions we used to make about artificial intelligence. You know, this came out of 1950s science fiction. We used to distinguish strong artificial intelligence from weak artificial intelligence. And neural networks have simply skipped over all of that and are being able to do things that humans cannot. You know, for instance, go through millions and millions of tweets.
Right.
And the consequence is that we have, you know, governments like China that have suddenly are able to, you know, gain control in a way that we never imagined. So here's a specific example. It used to be common to say that the web is like, the web is like, or the internet is like this network, this web, and like the brain is. And it would interpret censorship as damage and route around it the way networks do, so that it would actually be impossible to have serious censorship on the web. We don't say that anymore. We don't say it anymore because China has proved, in fact, that it's perfectly possible to have censorship on the web. They have their own search engine, which is very careful and does the government's bidding and does it through AI and neural network censorship. They are actually able to control the internet. And, you know, once upon a time, we didn't think that was possible. We thought somehow in the libertarian origins of the internet, we thought that this was going to be this great instrument for freedom.
Right.
In fact, it may prove, if the Chinese experiment works out, it may prove the greatest instrument for government control ever created.
Give me a brief overview of some of the other lectures. What are the other topics that you're interested in, you know, having through the Classics Institute lecture series?
Well, we had a librarian in to talk about the cultural changes or the changes that libraries have undergone, Drew Griffin from Cambridge. We have a top editor from Amazon coming in to talk about books. We have a former NSA official coming in to talk about spying. And in each of these, and others lined up, and in each of these, the idea is to kind of explore my thought that we're forgetting. This actually came to me when I was watching an episode of The Americans. Have you seen this program, Lori? It's about Russian moles in the Reagan era.
Yeah, I've read about it. Haven't seen it yet.
And I saw this moment in which the daughter, they've been very careful to be historically accurate, right? And then the daughter picks up a princess phone off the wall in the kitchen. Do you remember those old princess phones?
Yep.
They sat on a cradle, and the push buttons were in the handset. And she picks it up, holds it in her two hands, and begins dialing with her thumbs. And I thought, for all their attempt to be historically accurate, nobody in 1981 dialed a princess phone with their thumbs. Right? We don't get that until BlackBerries in the 1990s.
Wow. And nobody caught it.
There's a kind of way in which we're forgetful of our old interactions with technology.
Right.
And we're forgetful of the ways in which things have changed. Telephoning has changed, for instance. Libraries have changed. You used to go into a library and there would be bank upon bank of card catalog in these beautiful wooden objects.
Right. Boy, do I miss the card catalog.
And they're all gone.
And I get a little nostalgic.
They were beautiful pieces of furniture.
Right.
But in each case, I want to bring someone in to say, to reflect upon how their profession and the pursuit of the goals of their profession have changed now that we are 40 years in to the computer revolution.
Joseph Bottom, we have to leave it there for now, but you're a frequent guest on this program, so we look forward to the time that we can have you back for more of this conversation. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Lori.
And again, that major address from Heather Wilson. She's Secretary of the United States Air Force, and she comes to Rapid City to the Journey Museum, 7 p.m., Monday, June 25th. And her topic will be part of an overall series on the cultural consequences of computers brought forth by the Classics Institute at Dakota State University. Her focus is on computers at war. And that event, free, open to the public, but seating is limited to only 150 people. So contact the Journey Museum to reserve your ticket today.